So how was it to grow the business from zero to 200?
You're, in a sense, playing the same game the whole time, which is make something valuable that is so valuable that people are willing to pay you money for it. You know, make sure that the amount that they pay you is more than to serve them.
What advice would you give to younger self when, if you were to do it for the first time again?
And then I guess advice I'd give to my younger self is, gosh, there's so many things, so many mistakes I've made that would be useful information for that younger self. Yeah, I think maybe the first one is just you should run towards in the face.
So how do you stay creative in your work and how do you manage change?
I would say with creativity, yeah, I think at this stage company, that's all about making sure you are assigning yourself certain projects and giving yourselves the time to do them, which are generally, at least for me.
From Stanford to MIT to a career spanning over 20 years in tech, our next guest is on a mission to change how visual data is captured on job sites. Jeevan Kalanithi is a seasoned entrepreneur and CEO building OpenSpace, an AI reality capture software platform. On this episode, we discuss how OpenSpace's reality software can save builders time and money by eliminating redundant site visits and paperwork. Their customers have already mapped over 25 billion square feet of projects. We'll hear key advice for startups from Jeevan. Validate your riskiest assumptions as early as possible, even if it means facing bad news so you can adapt quickly. As he says, run toward the punch in the face. We'll also discuss current limitations of construction drone technology and how AI-enabled software like OpenSpace can complement drones by capturing indoor spaces. And finally, we'll explore this role of CEO and how it develops as a startup scales from 3 to 200 employees. If you're enjoying our podcast, you can support us by heading over to www.brickbytes.show and signing up to our newsletter. This is an easy and free way which helps us keep the podcast going. In addition, you'll receive all of the key insights from the guests we have on, as well as some bonus content about what's going on in the wider world of construction tech. And now, an announcement from our sponsor. BIM often feels overwhelming for contractors. That's why this episode is brought to you by Shift. They'll help you tackle all your digital needs from 3D BIM modeling to BIM strategy and beyond. Visit www.maketheshft.digital.
Okay, Jeevan, so you are a technology executive, a technologist and entrepreneur, graduated from Stanford University and MIT. You co-founded your first startup, Siftio, and sold it. You were the president of North America's largest drone company. Then you got into the VC business. And now for the last 6.5 years, you've been the CEO of OpenSpace. So can you lead us through how did you end up being where you are right now?
Yes. And I'll try to give you the short version. Otherwise, this podcast will be 2 days long. Very briefly, I guess I'll talk a little bit about what I'm generally interested top down, mm-hmm. and then just the story of how we started OpenSpace. So, I mean, the things I've been interested for a long time have been a few related topics. One is artificial intelligence. I got interested in that in college, basically because I was just curious how smart things worked. You know, how do they do what they do, whether they're humans or machines or animals or whatever.
And that was 20 years ago, more or less, right?
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And in particular, what I was interested in at the time is how smart things worked because they live in real physical reality, like a real environment with real stuff in it. Because a lot of artificial intelligence, especially at that time, and even today, kind of conceived as intelligent things as like these abstract things that just lived out there in the cyberspace or inside your brain, not things that are like living in real reality. I also thought that was a little bit weird because intelligent things like animals evolved in real physical reality. So that's thing number one, I guess. And thing number two is I was like building things for real people that mm-hmm. make their lives better or more interesting. And that expressed itself in various ways, of course, through my career. I think with OpenSpace, it's pretty simple, though. I mean, I got into the world of making stuff for builders, people in the construction industry. I mean, prior to OpenSpace, so at at that drone company at 3D Robotics, one of the key products we had was called SiteScan. And what it did was fly over a job site and just digitize it so that builders could interact with and see what was really there without physically needing to inspect it. And that taught me a lot about what made builders' lives easier. And I also had some similar scar tissue. You know, my first company was a hardware company. We built real physical things. And it was
easier. Was it in construction or not in construction?
Not in construction. It was a consumer electronics company, I guess is the simplest way of it to say it.
Yeah.
And building a little widget, you know, a million times is definitely easier than building a building. However, they have similar problems, which is what is, you know, you have a site where stuff's getting made and what is going on over there? And with manufacturing, not always, but oftentimes, your job site, aka your factory, can be like 6,000 miles away. So knowing what is going on over there is really important. And I had many gnarly stories of near-death experiences, you know, of the company that would have been resolved if I could just teleport to the factory and see what's going on there. And so I saw that problem over and over in construction, just a lack of information, you know, for people to make informed decisions. And I saw that the drones were kind of scratching at that problem. I mean, they weren't purpose built for it, frankly. I think, you know, drones only cover a certain part of the building process and so on, but they point to this issue of making builders' lives easier. So yeah, you know, I had that idea kind of rattling around in my head after I left 3D Robotics and took a bunch of time off and connected with some friends from grad school from MIT who are computer vision people. And I can tell you more about that if you want, but we basically identified that we could make builders' lives easier based a bit on the technology work that they had been doing.
Through the use
of what builders were up to.
Through the usage of drones. Yeah, that's actually quite interesting. Can you elaborate on that? When you think the drone industry is helping the people on construction sites right now, I can see a lot of use cases with the reality capture and scanning of the buildings, of existing properties especially, through the drones, at least here in the UK. Where do you think we are right now with the drones and construction tech?
I think that's exactly right. They're one way of digitizing a job or a building so that you can see it and make decisions without physically needing to be there, especially with drones, because, you know, humans don't have the natural ability to fly. So, you know, being able to get like your eyes, aka a camera up into the air can be important for some types of projects. So, you know, I think they're definitely a useful part of the arsenal to help people get information. Now, I mean, I think the main thing I would say, though, that it's not really a criticism, it's just a natural limitation. What drones do is that, number one, they don't yet really go indoors very well. And most construction headaches are, you know, indoors. I mean, most construction projects are not ground up anyways. They're renovations and TIs and things like that. So a drone doesn't really allow you to see what's going on in a job in the indoor phase. Not really. Not yet anyways. And then the second thing is they're pretty easy to use. You know, they've definitely gotten easier to use, but they're still kind of a pain to use, you know, in some fundamental way. Asking a person who's on a job to fly a drone around is taking time out of his or her day with it probably doing something else. And so I think those are two kind of limitations on drones, but they're not bad. I mean, they're useful. They help you look at, you know, like maybe a curtain wall you need to like inspect, or the roof of some building you can't access or something like that. So they're definitely a useful part of the toolkit.
Okay. And how did it lead you to OpenSpace?
Yeah, well, I mean, to put it really simply, my co-founders, Mike and Philip, I know them again from grad school. They both did their PhDs in like AI and computer vision, you could say. And they were having great careers. You know, they a lot of their work from graduate school was featured in this really cool TED Talk called Birth of a Word, So if any of the listeners want to check it out, just Google Birth of a Word, TED, and you can see something pretty neat. And it's mostly computer vision work, not much to do with construction, but kind of show some of the technology inspirations behind OpenSpace. And that helped launch those guys' career. Philip was a research scientist at MIT after that. And then Mike started a company called Bluefin Labs that was video analytics that did well, and he sold it to Twitter. Nothing to do with construction, of course. Mm-hmm. But those guys had always been interested in using cameras to digitize massive amounts of reality information and then using AI and different algorithms to pull answers out of it. And so Mike called me one day, and he and Philip were messing around with this concept that used 360 cameras, which were new at the time. And those guys, Mike and Philip, weren't like in construction or anything, but they had a lot of experience with this technology. And as Mike was describing the idea to me, I had the thought, who could really use this is builders. I had been in this world, and I was like, man, they would be so pumped just to be able to have a system of record, like facts, and what is actually going on the project.
Yeah, in every centimeter rather than just in the,
recording. And so we just started, it was good timing. Like Mike was ready to do something new. He wanted to get out of Twitter. And I've always wanted to work with those guys. They're awesome, very skilled, talented guys, friends of mine. And we had the time and space to explore an idea. So we said, let's just bootstrap this idea and then prove to ourselves whether this is something that is actually useful, that builders would actually want, and whether we have the ingredients for like a high growth technology company. And, having had some experience doing that, we had a little bit of a playbook for how you evaluate that. And then being within a VC firm, you kind of have a bit of hopefully objective way to evaluate that. So we spent some time working on the idea through prototypes. And I should say, by that time, having already been building products for builders, I had a bunch of contacts and friends that were, general contractors and so on. So the idea wasn't something that we just were tech guys navel-gazing at a neato idea. We just spent a ton of time on job sites, just hanging out, helping out, and trying out different versions of the technology. And so it was very much built with the field in mind. And in fact, like the specific core capture product was essentially literally what 1PM asked us to build. So it was very much following what the customers wanted us to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So about OpenSpace, what does the company do, and what are your products or services?
Yeah, so it's pretty simple. So unsurprisingly, OpenSpace is an artificial intelligence company, specifically a computer vision company. And what we do is we make it incredibly easy for really anybody that's managing any physical space, which is people in the construction industry. We help them have a full visual record of their job, so they can see what's there from anywhere at any time. And we allow them to digitize their project all the time, every week, every day. So it's very simple to use. And by doing that, they can just have a set of facts and see what is going on. All the decisions can be informed by reality, not just people's memory or report written words or something like that. So very concretely, what the core product OpenSpace Capture does is it allows someone who's walking around on a project to just do a normal job walk, walk around on the job. And with OpenSpace, they just take a camera along for the ride. And we're not a hardware company. These are consumer cameras you can buy on Amazon or whatever. You walk around the project. The camera's kind of clicking away in the background. You can almost forget that it's there. And then when you're done, you upload the video and our algorithms take over. Mm-hmm. And then what they produce is something that's kind of like Google Street View for your job. So you can just pick a spot on your drawing and then teleport yourself there and look in 360 all the way around. And again, you do this over and over again. So you can say, like, what was there, last week? Or we need to look behind the wall to see if backing was present in this location. And you no longer have to rip it open or send someone to check it out. You can just click a button and see what's there. So that's the core product. a very simple way to have a complete visual record of a project. And we've collected a lot of data on behalf of our customers so far. The company has grown quickly. I think we're at 25 billion square feet or something have been organized by the technology. So we've built other products on top of that. One called BIM Plus, which allows you to compare this data to your model. You don't need to use BIM if you use OpenSpace. Drawings is all you need. But if you do use a model, we give you some cool capabilities around that. We now ingest other types of data, like drone data and laser scan data, infrared camera data, things like that. And then we have a product called OpenSpace Track, which actually analyzes those images and can track progress of certain critical path trades or materials. So, for example, OpenSpace Track can tell you how much drywall has been taped and how much has been hung and in terms of percentages or material quantities and how you're doing versus your schedule. So that's a really useful piece of information for a lot of projects. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So are these cameras carried by employees of OpenSpace, or are they used by site teams? Who are they operated by?
Just by the site teams. That was important for us. We're a technology company. There's nothing wrong with being a services company, but we wanted to build something that could scale up and have a bigger impact faster. And so it needed to be something that was easy enough to use and fits within the day of extremely busy people on a job site. So we just arm them with the technology and they can just use it on their own. I mean, we do have some customers that will sub out the walking of a job from time to time. I mean, the technology doesn't care who's walking around.
Yeah.
In fact, people put it on robots or golf carts and it works just fine. But are generally speaking, it's the site teams that are using it however they want.
Mm-hmm. So having captured so much data, you mentioned that you also take point clouds through one of the services.
Yeah, we have a product called BIM Plus, and among other things, it is able to ingest a point cloud from, you know, the most common file formats that laser scanners tend to produce. And you can visualize that in OpenSpace as well. So you can look at a point cloud in our technology in the browser, or cloud-based system. You can compare it to images from a camera or to a model or whatever. So it's pretty handy. Of course, not all projects can afford to or need to have that type of laser scan data. So, it's not required, of course, to use OpenSpace, but for those that do, we now support the ability to view and interact with dense point clouds.
Mm-hmm. So on the data point, so I guess what we're capturing on the construction side is so much data, right? Because there's so many things, moving parts, which are in the progress, and the next day, the day after, this data is different, right? Because things change. So what can people use this data for? And do you think we have kind of discovered all of the potential ways of using this data, or there's still some things to come that we don't know about yet?
Yes. So definitely, I think we're just scratching the surface on what we can use this data for. I can talk a little bit more about that. But what people use it for today is it's not complicated. OpenSpace is, simplicity is one of our core values. Simplify everything is core value number one for us. And so we're not trying to ask or persuade the builders to do something complex with the information. It's just whenever you wish you had a picture of something, just to resolve an issue or figure something out, we have it. If you use OpenSpace, you'll have that image so you can just resolve an issue, yes or no. And so to be a little bit more specific, a lot of our customers just have OpenSpace open during OAC meetings so that they can just go through all the issues. We have a functionality we call Field Notes. It's very simple. It just allows you to tag the data with information. If there's a RFI or change order, you can just link it into OpenSpace, say it's through your PM system like Procore or ACC or what have you. And that RFI, say, now just points to the issue that you're trying to deal with. And it's so much easier just to look and see what's going on than have someone describe it to you in words. I think we've all been there. You're you're reading this document and you're like, what is this person talking about? Or a text message and so unclear. If you could just look at it, you could resolve it in 2 seconds. So OIC meetings go much faster with a tool like OpenSpace. Change orders and RFIs get dealt with much more quickly if you can just see what's there. Or punch lists are much, much easier if you can see what's there. So you can kind of see how many, many tasks are just simplified if you have image data. And I could go on and on, but a couple other things I would say is a lot of our customers will use OpenSpace in the pre-construction and bidding process. If you're a GC and you can get the eyeballs of your trade partners into the project, it's just going to make your bid more accurate. You know, if you could represent to your client that you're going to be transparent with them with a technology like ours, that's huge. That's what everybody wants these days, right? And OpenSpace allows that that equal flow of communication to happen on a project. There's a lot of nuances to that, which I can get into. So as you can see, there's a lot of really simple ways that people use OpenSpace. And of course, it's not like a new use case. People have been photo documenting projects for forever, since cameras were invented. So in a sense, all we've done is make that much more comprehensive, much easier, and much cheaper than hiring someone to like take photos, you know, with a traditional camera. In terms of what we're going to do with this data, I think we're just at the very beginning steps. I mean,
where's your gut feeling?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like builders, people in construction, their job is to transform physical reality from thing A to thing B. Take an empty lot and turn it into an apartment complex. And in a way, we've forced builders to like conform to a bunch of processes that are convenient for maybe office workers or computers, like documents and spreadsheets and stuff like that. But really, the thing that they need to deal with is real reality, you know? And if you think about the way people learn these things, it's they're sitting next to someone, someone's pointing at something and just, you know, describing it. It's not like a document or book learning. So necessarily, not purely anyways. And so at OpenSpace, in a way, we're sort of old school. We're just trying to make building like it used to be, where it's like you're situated in real physical reality. You're learning by looking at things, solving problems by looking at it and making decisions and seeing how things change. And we were just using the 21st century version of that, acknowledging that, you know, it's hard to get everybody in the same place at the same time, especially, of course, with trends in a lot of the world where there's just not enough labor to do projects and getting them all in the same place is difficult. So we're just trying to make that easier. And so with this data that we've got, it's really the root data that people want to work with anyways. And with what we can do with AI, we can start doing some things that analyze that information and answer questions for people in a way that's far faster and way less manual than what we make people do today. Of like counting things and walking around, like a computer can get pretty good at that, save them a lot of time.
Okay, so that is part of the next question. So where do you want to be in the future as an open space? Maybe tap more into the AI space, or where would you see the company in, let's say, 5-10 years?
Oh man, there's so many things that we can do. And so the real job we have is to focus and pick some directions that we really like, given there's so much we can do. So I'll list off a few things. The first thing is, I think in 5 to 10 years, using a technology like OpenSpace is just going to be absolutely standard and normal. Like it will be weird if a project doesn't use it. And I'm not saying that because we're so great or anything like that. I just think that it just is easier, you know? Like my metaphor is, today, if I asked you to do a research paper and I said, you cannot use Google, you have to go to the library, you'd be like, that is weird. Like, why, you know? And I think for builders, like if in 5 years, if you ask them to like answer a question, say, no, you can't use a technology like OpenSpace. You have to literally get in the truck and go to the job site. They'll be like, why? Like, I get that for some problems, I'll definitely need to do that. but for everything, that's just weird, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think this idea of having this simple to use visual record of the project that's getting updated frequently that you can just look at from your phone or computer will just be expected and normal. So I think that's thing number one. And I see it happening, you know, when people begin using our technology, they almost always expand. It's very rare that they don't, you know, it's just easier. You know, we had a superintendent who was using OpenSpace, and I guess his metaphor might not make sense to people that aren't like older, but I'll say it anyways. He was like, well, you know, use OpenSpace. It's like going back to, what did he say? He said, once you use OpenSpace, you're not going to quit using it. That'd be like stopping using Netflix and going back to Blockbuster and renting DVDs. Yeah. It was just stupid. Why would you do it? And I was like, that's a very flattering thing to say. But I do think it makes sense. Like once you use it, it just makes your life easier. So that's thing number one. Thing number two is I think that there are a lot of simple day-to-day tasks that builders do in kind of a way that is time consuming or a little bit annoying that will flow through systems like OpenSpace. Like whereas today they might call a meeting and set it on Friday so everybody can show up, or they're texting somebody or something, I think they'll just conduct it through a visual system like ours. It'll just be simpler and easier. So, you know, I see that happening, and that's not necessarily high tech stuff, but just people getting more and more used to using this data for different tasks, large and small. Two more things. I think the type of information that will be useful in a tool like OpenSpace will grow, and it already has. You know, 360 images are the main data type we have in OpenSpace, but people are putting other types of data in there now. Like I mentioned, drone data and infrared cameras, or even just smartphone photos. And then the last thing, which I think is really exciting, is the speed at which different AI systems are improving is amazing. And I think there will be some breakthroughs, not just on AI systems that understand text, which is what people typically think about when they think of ChatGPT and things like that, or like image generation, but actually understanding of imagery data, where a system can start to look at reality information and make informed statements about it. That work is very much in the research phase right now, but I think it's progressing. And so what I'm excited about at OpenSpace is, I mean, we have a ton of this data, you know? I don't think anybody else has this same amount of information that's structured in the way that we have it. So our ability to build these systems for our customers, I think, is pretty unique. And so we're constantly, you know, investigating and investing in building not just neato things, but things that are actually like legitimately useful for our customers that analyze this data.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So on the matter of getting into every job site so that more and more people use your or similar technologies. So one of the main factors, apart from the fact that it just has to work well and be smooth and easy to use for everyone, is the price. So it is more, it can be more widely used, right? So the general, I think, technology, like the theory of technology, is that it should decrease the value of the service, right? Because there is more competition and technology becomes better and it gets cheaper. Yeah. So do you see similar kind of pattern or way within reality capture on site, technologies which provide reality capture on site, or rather not?
I think in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. I think it's a general principle, like, yeah, you're right. Just like an economic rule of thumb is the cost of a good will fall as time passes, as people get more efficient at it, or the quality will increase and the price will remain fixed. I mean, that happens a lot too. And I think you sort of see a mix of both with technology, especially in reality capture. But it's not necessarily linear. You know, like take laser scanners, for example. In some ways, they have gotten cheaper, but not in this massive price drop way. And there's just, it all goes down to specifics. There are just physical components in those devices that are complicated. And so they're not like Moore's Law computer chips. They're not necessarily going to get cheaper. And then there's lots of, and this is inside baseball stuff, but there's lots of sales and marketing dynamics which will want to keep price points maybe maintained. If you have a certain way of selling, say, a product, we have to compensate your salespeople in a certain way that's going to keep prices up potentially, right? So there's a lot of factors that go into why or why a price will or won't drop for a given system. But I think, I guess, to answer your question specifically, I mean, I think for our type of reality capture, which is camera and image based, in a sense, that was the big price drop, right? Like prior to technologies like ours, reality capture was pretty much synonymous with laser scanners. You know, that's how people thought of it. And I think we were able to identify that computer vision and cameras were getting pretty good. And that you could use a much cheaper way to digitize a job site than what a laser scanner can do. It's not the same though, right? Because a laser scanner will give you information that cameras cannot. So they're not identical. Like lots of times when a technology comes in and sort of quote unquote replaces the old way, it's not a one for one replacement, right? It's like it does it in a different way, maybe not quite as good, but so much easier, right? That it democratizes it is the word people use. And so in some ways, I think that's what we've done at OpenSpace is we've democratized this concept of reality capture so that all kinds of jobs can use it. All kinds of jobs can do it all the time. And it really changes the value of the information when more people can do it more often. So so in a sense, like, as I reflect on your question, that price drop of reality capture was a technology shift from laser scanners. That's really the only way to do this to cameras. And that's part of what we do. You know, OpenSpace is going to be much more affordable as a general rule than laser scanning a job like every week. I mean, it will be by a zillion, in fact, a zillion, you know? So I do see that pattern for sure.
Brilliant. All right. So let's move on to your entrepreneurial experience. So OpenSpace is your second startup, right? Is it?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so how big is the business right now in terms of the employees?
Yeah, it's about 200 people.
Yeah, that's what I noticed on LinkedIn as well. So how was it to grow the business from zero to 200? And the follow-up question on that is that what advice would you give to younger self when if you were to do it for the first time again?
Yeah. I mean, how was it? I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I think with startups especially, I mean, any business is kind of like this because you operate in a dynamic environment. With a startup, you're in a sense playing the same game the whole time, which is make something valuable that is so valuable that people are willing to pay you money for it, you know, make sure that the amount that they pay you is more than it costs you to serve them and make sure that the number of people you're selling to is sufficiently large, like a large enough market that you can sustain the company. I mean, it sounds simple, but like, that's what you kind of have to do. And that's what you're shooting for. And that's what you're trying to do from day zero of starting the company. That doesn't really change. But the actual rules of the game very much change from stage to stage. Oftentimes they reverse, you know,
and that can, you mean like a business cycles or something different?
No, it's kind of strategically. So to give you an example, like when you're first starting out, like, and there's like three people in a room, the founders or say the CEO, like, that person needs to be the most creative person that has all the ideas about what they're going to do. I mean, who else is there's nobody else anyways. There's just three people anyway. So who else is going to have them? Right. And that's the way it should be. That is very important. As a company gets bigger, it is counterproductive actually for the CEO or the founders to have all the ideas. It's just a bottleneck, you know, like at that point, what you need is to enable your team to have creative ideas and fund them and support them well. And so your role from like chief creative person goes away to something more like editor in chief. And that's very different. I mean, those are very different mindsets. And of course, sometimes you need to go back into like creative authoritarian mode. Sometimes you just need to do that too. And so judging that is not easy. And so as a company grows, you have to constantly decide like what you're actually trying to accomplish and the way to do it. Or to put it another way, you know, when you're first starting out, you really just want to prove that you've built something that people want to use, period. You know, so if they don't, then you're toast. Like, don't pass go, don't raise money, just figure that out. And, you know, most companies fail, not technology companies, it is, most companies fail, in my experience, not because they can't get the thing to work that they're trying to build, it's because they built something nobody wants. You know, I mean, that's much more common. So you got to figure that out. But then once you do that, your job's not done. You have to figure out, well, can I sell it in an efficient way? Can I get 10 people to sell it that aren't just me? You know, so that journey of 0 to 200 is always changing. It's not, no one tells you when it's changing. You have to kind of figure it out. And it will continue to do so. So it's been interesting. It's definitely, if you ever think you're on cruise control, you're about to hit the wall. That's
for sure. That's a very good one.
You gotta also be very vigilant. And then I guess advice I'd give to my younger self is, gosh, there's so many things, so many mistakes I've made that would be useful for that younger self. But
give one or two.
Yeah, I think maybe the first one is just, you should run towards the punch in the face. Like, you've got to like find out what the lethal risks to your idea are as soon as humanly possible, which is very weird and unnatural for humans to do. Like, no one wants to like learn why their thing they care so much about is bad or stupid, you know? It's exactly what you got to do early on, because no one wants to start a stupid company, you know, like, and realize that 3 years later. And so really writing down the scariest risks to your idea and vigorously validating or invalidating them is super important. I think with my first company, I think there were some like scary risks that were kind of like, yeah, I don't know, just not thinking about that. You know? And so I think that's one piece of advice I would say.
So not being afraid to fail, right?
Yeah, it's similar to not being afraid to fail. I guess not being afraid to fail helps put you in the mindset of like running at the most critical risks. So to give you an example for OpenSpace, I think we had some of that experience so that we did that early on. And those risks can be something that like a McKinsey consultant's brain would get into, like, oh, well, your total addressable market is only blah, blah, blah. Some of them are just feel things that you working on the idea will identify. So for example, for OpenSpace, you know, like the way it generally works is someone's walking around and they may have a camera on a monopod, or most often they're just, it's just sticking to their hard hat as they walk around. It's pretty easy, pretty simple. But one thing that I was worried about was like, is that just going to be too dorky and weird? You know, are people going to do that? You know? And because if it is true that it is too dorky to wear a camera on your hard hat for most people, then the idea is stupid. We should not start an OpenSpace and move on to something else.
What made you change your mind?
Well, yeah, I just asked people, you know, and like observed them and tried to prove to myself either way whether that was true. And, you know, the answers I got were like, yeah, it's kind of weird, you know, definitely. But here's the deal. Like, if it gives me the kind of information that you guys are showing me, I'll totally do it. And then there was nuances. Like, do I have to wear it all the time? No. Okay. Can I like take it on and off easily? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm good to go. You know, this is like our conversations with some superintendents and PEs. And so we just attacked that quickly, very early on in the bootstrapping phase, to understand, because it's a little bit of a weird question to ask somebody, you know, but you've got to do that. And, you know, I've got other examples of that where, you know, where I would be detecting something that could seem scary, like it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And we just had to like, just dig to see if it was real or not. So that's what I would say. Maybe my first piece of advice is like run towards that punch in the face, because getting it early is very good. And then you can get up and react and see what you're going to do to it. You know, figuring out there's something critically wrong with your business 5 years in is not fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's honestly probably the main piece of advice I would give to my younger self.
Brilliant. Thank you. Okay. So the last one, looking at the time, the last one I would ask is on the creativity and change. So the only constant is change. I think that's how they say it. So how do you stay creative in your work, and how do you manage change?
Those are good questions. I feel like it will behoove me to come up with good answers just from general. but I'll give it a shot. I would say with creativity, I think at this stage company, that's all about making sure you are assigning yourself certain projects and giving yourselves the time to do them, which are generally writing, at least for me. Like, what do we want to build next year? And just say, I'm going to just write it down, you know, like give it my best shot and what I think. And that focus time is very valuable. And it's hard to get, you know, so once your company is bigger, you realize that your time is very precious, mm-hmm. and that it is very valuable to your team for them to get your time for various mm-hmm. reasons, right? And so it is normal for your calendar to be full of like a bazillion meetings. So it takes explicit effort to not let that happen. And so mm-hmm. that means blocking off time to do solo work, and just giving yourselves assignments that everybody believes you should do that involve that. And that could be writing the handbook for your company's culture. You know, it doesn't always have to be like some new product idea, or it could be mm-hmm. a product roadmap concepts. And then you just give those to your team members that are responsible for executing the work and see what their feedback is. You know, mm-hmm. maybe they're like, this is really good. Or maybe they're like, this idea makes no sense, dude, because, and you're like, okay, good to know, you know? I think that's important. I think the second thing that I think is very valuable is what you're feeding your brain is very important. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that just means talking to customers, talking to our team members, you know, not only those that interact with customers, of course, to see what they think about things. And, you know, I like to go to conferences, not necessarily just to give talks and get in and get out, but just to wander around, like, what are people doing, caring about, you know, and of course, going to job sites. So I think those things are helpful to keep the creative juices kind of activated and productive. So those are things I try to do. But I'll think about your question more since it's a
yeah, I like that.
And you had a second part to your question too, which I slipped my mind. Or maybe you didn't actually. I can't remember. Those are the ways that I think you try to keep creative though at this stage of a company.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Jeevan, thank you very much. So that's really the last one. Where can people find out more about you and OpenSpace?
Yeah, our website is openspace.ai. Check it out. As I mentioned, the company has had the good fortune to scale up pretty nicely. So we serve customers pretty much anywhere in the world. And we have teams located in many parts of the globe too. So if you're building in the UK or Europe, for example, we have customers there. But we also have team members there, sales, support, and so on. And you know, we've localized the technology to a number of regions. So openspace.ai, check it out. You can find me through that as well. My LinkedIn profile is there, and you can always drop me a line on that if you want to get in touch.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.